Takes a minute.
You consent to being live streamed. Okay, I'm consenting.
Okay, all good. I'm glad they asked you for that.
Yeah.
All right.
We're streaming live on Facebook right now.
All right, well, we'll get started shortly then. But how are you doing, Dad?
I'm doing great. The sun is shining. Actually, it's going to be 91 degrees here today in Los Angeles. So it's crazy, crazy warm. But we had some real winter earlier in the week. It was in the 70s.
Oh, dear.
But all is good. Lots of good projects and exciting things going on. So,
well, I'm so happy to be with you yet again. This is our third energy crash course. We've now covered energy storage and microgrids. And so the obvious next episode was vehicle to grid. So thanks those of you who are joining us live today or maybe watching this recording. Really delighted to be here with my dad, Ted Flanagan, and president of EcoMotion, as we work to demystify different energy topics. And I don't know a lot about vehicle to grid. And so I am going to ask all the obvious questions, hopefully. And if I forget some, please feel free to add them in the chat. But let's get started super high level, Dad. What is vehicle to grid?
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for hosting another crash course. It's great to be here with you and to talk about these topics that really excite me. And vehicle to grid is kind of a new concept that's come about, and it's come about because of the launch of electric vehicles. And when you have plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, fuel cell electric vehicles, regular electric vehicles, all of a sudden we have a lot of batteries in society, batteries that we didn't have in society. And if you think about it this way, it becomes really clear that we have an asset to be used, and that is that we only use our vehicles about 5% of the time. Typically, the average person only uses their vehicle about 5% of the time.
Right.
That means that 95% of the time that vehicle is sitting there doing nothing.
Right.
And that means that that expensive battery in that electric vehicle, or in the case of a fuel cell vehicle, the amount of hydrogen in that vehicle that can be converted to electricity, is an asset that can be used to shore up the grid. And so imagine just very simply that in the future, everybody will have an electric vehicle, and every one of us, the vehicle will be plugged in to a charger in our garage or in our yard somewhere. And in the future, when you're not using it, you can make arrangements to the utility that they can actually use that storage. So when there's a period of peak demand, they might actually draw power from electric vehicles all throughout their service territory in sort of a virtual power plant kind of a mode. So,
wow, that makes so much sense. So it's a huge asset and value, or could be potentially, to the grid. But what's the current status? I mean, how?
Well, there's you got to be kind of lay it all on the table. You know, one of the big issues with vehicle to grid is that you're cycling the batteries a lot more. And when you cycle batteries a lot more, that's one of the factors that causes those batteries to degrade. So there's been a real reluctance from most of the electric vehicle manufacturers to let their electric vehicle fleets, to let these electric vehicles be connected to the grid. Because if they're cycling every day, then you're starting to have a lot more battery degradation than you would if you were just using that car periodically. So that's an issue that has held back this vehicle to grid. But Nissan has been working on this since 2012. It was really the leading auto manufacturer. Now I've just heard that Tesla is really going to start making their Model 3s compatible for vehicle to grid as well.
So is this happening anywhere in the US?
Well, there's pilot programs, and there's just pilot programs. That's really where we're at. UC San Diego had a pilot program. I want to talk about a pilot program in the Netherlands. There's pilot programs in Japan. One of the interesting things that came out, and this was 5 years ago, or maybe 6 years ago, there was a national study that said if you had an electric vehicle, and if we had vehicle-to-grid capabilities, then the average vehicle owner could make between $300 and $500 a year just by letting their vehicle be used for this vehicle-to-grid capability, by plugging into the utility grid. And that range of difference was based on how much you use your electric vehicle, because if you use your electric vehicle a lot, then there's not a lot of extra capacity in that battery, extra energy in that battery that can be used by the grid. So you'd get $300 a year. But if you didn't use your car very much, like me, then you might be eligible for $500. So those are very initial values. But I think we're going to see much higher values for the use of our vehicles for the grid in the future.
And so how much degradation are we talking? I mean, is it cutting the battery life in half if a program like this was in full effect? Like, what does it mean for the consumer, the driver of that car?
Yeah, this is something that's got to be figured out, because nobody's going to want to do it if they lose their effective life of their batteries. That's a really expensive upgrade in electric vehicles and right. New battery bank. You know, a Tesla, I think if you drive a Tesla for 10 years, I think you're down, your battery degradation is only down 10% or something like that. So, but if you did start cycling it daily, I think it would go down a lot more than that. There's a lot of people working, as we said in one of the prior episodes, a lot of people working on battery chemistry and finding the best way of cycling batteries. There's a lot more than just how often you cycle. It's the depth of discharge. It's the temperature of discharge, it's the frequency of discharge, it's the speed of discharge. So there's a lot of variables, and a lot of smart people are looking into this. I could envision a future in which, and I chatted about this with our utility here, in which maybe the utilities own the batteries in our EVs. And in fact, if they do get degraded, then they have to swap them out for us or something like that. This is something that has to get worked out, but because the very basic principle of V2G is that, wow, we got all these batteries out there, these unused assets. Come on, let's figure this out. I mean, imagine that you go to you drive to Los Angeles Airport, you park your car, you're going on vacation. The car is sitting there, right? Now, why can't, and the utility has experienced its peak demand. It's right. August, it's September, October, whatever. It's a hot day. Now, the utility could, if you're plugged in, the utility could draw from that. So when you're on vacation, your car could be making you money. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool stuff.
Very cool. So the utilities would benefit because they would have more capacity, right? More flexibility as the grid is peak demand, whatever's going on with them. Can you give some examples of utilities that maybe have embraced this, or what are those pilot programs you talked about, and what are we learning from them?
Well, I think the pilot programs are teaching us the technology. I don't think that the utilities have embraced this yet to figure out the pricing. Although there you are in Snowmass, Colorado, being served by Holy Cross Energy, which is, has a program where it will buy capacity from people, energy at peak periods, from however you can deliver it. And that includes electric vehicles. So there is some monetization. Okay. There is some monetization, and I know Holy Cross is paying up to $1 a kilowatt hour to buy peak power. So whether that's coming from power walls that you happen to have on your property, that's another part of their program, or it comes from your electric vehicle, or if you can prove that you're able to curtail certain loads, then you can be paid for that. So we're starting to see this utility value, and the utilities look at this through the lens of what they call the virtual power plant. And this notion that in the old days, they just had one big power plant, right. And then the big, lots of wires going all over the place. And now we're going to have all these distributed power plants and distributed energy resources, DERs is what people call them. And they're going to be solar systems, and they're going to be storage systems. And now they're going to be vehicles that are going to be plugged into the grid as well. And so the power plant, instead of being centralized, becomes grossly decentralized. And the term that's being used is virtual.
Yeah, and we're seeing obviously this surge of electric vehicles on the market. I know we talked a little bit about the Ford F-150, which has gotten a lot of attention for its emergency power backup faculties. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the trends in electric vehicles and sort of when we might expect seeing a little bit more vehicle to grid collaboration.
I'm always saying in the next 5 years, we're going to see this radical change. And I don't know how fast this is going to come about. It is phenomenal, the rise of electric vehicles. And, you know, you think back to the days of the Prius, and the Prius was this radical,
kind of revolutionary,
a revolutionary vehicle. And now that's pretty darn old hat, what maybe. So, but we're seeing, you know, a really strong rise in electric vehicles. There's so many different ones that are available, and they're sporty and they're fast. They're being, you know, they're not unlike the Prius, which was really dorky. You know, I had, as you know, et cetera. I love the Prius, but most people didn't. But nowadays you can buy, you know, you can buy a nice Volvo, you can buy a nice Porsche, you can buy a nice Tesla, you can buy, I mean, there's 40 or so models available. And the F-150 is the best selling pickup truck in America. It's the best selling vehicle in the world. So this is amazing. This would be like the Volkswagen Bug of yesteryear going electric. It's like, wow, if the F-150, that appeals to such a wide swath of people, that now the F-150, if it goes electric and it gets this reputation of being really fast and sporty and cost effective, then I think it's really going to take off. So I wanted to tell the story a little bit about, you know, how vehicle to grid would work for my own house here. And because I've got 100% solar that we're taking care of our needs here and our electric vehicle. And I was, because I'm in the energy business, I thought, well, I should have some kind of emergency backup storage. And so most people are thinking about Tesla Powerwalls right now. And a Tesla Powerwall costs about $15,000 before rebates and has 13 and a half kilowatt hours in each Powerwall. And so on my home here on a hot summer day, I use over 40 kilowatt hours. So I would need to have, if I covered my entire load, I would need to have at least two, maybe three power walls here. So that's an option. And this is, it's a slick option. And it's a very, I think, very progressive.
Each power wall being about 15,000 a piece?
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, about $45,000 investment.
Yeah, maybe half of that, you know, is rebated at the most. Half of that is rebated through the SGIP program out here in California, but or at least a third is rebated. So $30,000 to have resilience. Now, if I brought in a Generac, which is the biggest generator company in America, it's just selling. They're just selling generators like crazy. Now they're natural gas generators, right? So if I wanted a Generac and I wanted a 10 kW unit or even bigger than that, I'm probably spending, you know, $15,000 total, maybe less than that. So at a fraction of the cost of doing the Tesla Powerwall route, then I get the Generac. Well, I don't want a noisy generator that's burning fossil fuels and that's contributing to climate problems. And of course, the Generac is not being used on a daily basis for anything. It's just sitting there for an emergency. But what I realized was that, my goodness, I've got an electric vehicle that's sitting there with 60 kilowatt hours on board. And so remember, compare that to the Tesla Powerwalls at 13 and a half kilowatt hours. The Ford pickup will have more like 90 kilowatt hours on board. A school bus has more like 150 kilowatt hours on board. A municipal bus has more like 300 kilowatt hours on board. So you can just see that car, that unused, that largely unused asset could be linked into my own home and provide me with backup power very, very cost effectively.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And we see that with buses too, right? Like I know in Santa Monica, you know, in many cities, even just right in Mexico City, there are electric buses. So those have, like you said, much bigger capacity for storage.
Yes, and could be very important in the event of a grid outage if they can drive somewhere and plug in. I mean, that's the real thing. You know, I've been doing this research for Santa Monica, which is some mobile generators. How do we plug mobile generators into buildings? So B to B, not V to G, but V battery to building. And you need to have an inlet. You need a way of plugging in. It's almost like taking an RV to an RV park. You need a big plug and plug. You want you to be able to plug your Ford pickup truck into your house. Well, that can either happen if you already have a charger, like I do here for my electric vehicle. I got to get rid of that. I got to get rid of that to unidirectional charger. That just takes my AC power from my house and puts a DC into my car. What I'll need to do is swap that out with a bi-directional charger so that I can go both directions. I can draw the utility or I can draw from the car. The utility can draw for demand response programs and peak shaving. I can draw from the car for energy backup if the grid goes down. And inversely, I can load that car, obviously, with solar power when I have ample solar power. So there's some logistics here of being able to hook up every car.
Sure,
so I'm working on a project up in Tahoe where I'm advising on a building new resort that's going in. I'm proposing that every parking space has a bi-directional charger that is wired to every individual condo so that you can have the resilience that your car provides you parked in the garage. Pretty cool stuff.
So cool. And so you said in the next 5 years, I mean, it sounds like some of this is very possible. Like in California, is that totally allowed to go bi-directional with the energy flow?
It will be. I mean, there will be different rules. There will be sort of different national electric code rules for configuring this, but generally I think there's nothing in particular. There's no huge barriers in the way. And let me tell you about this, you mentioned school buses. So they have like the new school buses are all being configured for vehicle to grid, which is great. In fact, if you get a grant from the California Energy Commission, the only school bus that you can buy is V2G ready. And so, as you know, we're working down in Chula Vista for the elementary school district there, and they got a grant for 10 buses, their Bluebird buses, and they each have 150 kWh on board. And we're going to be powering those buses with solar at their transportation yard, which is pretty neat. We get all sorts of low carbon fuel standard credits for that. But in the what we're trying to do, we set up a microgrid at the district office, and the microgrid is based on solar and storage. But we realized that if we need more capacity for the microgrid, and the microgrid is there handling all their IT functions and the refrigeration for their food kitchens and all, but if we need more capacity, wouldn't it be great if we could just drive a bus over and bring the bus over and just plug it in, and that gives us 150 kilowatt hours. Or we could take that bus to any one of their 49 school sites in the future if they're wired for this kind of backup capacity.
Oh, cool.
So you think about fleets, you think of school buses, you think of garbage trucks, UPS trucks. I mean, there's all postal service trucks. There's a lot of fleets that are out there. But that's probably where we'll first see V2G coming into existence, is when you've got multiple vehicles in one location. That'll make a lot of sense to begin with. And then it'll become more and more distributed.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's an issue for the utility in different ways, but for freedom loving Americans, like, how cool is that to have all these different options and freedom from the grid? It's exciting. Where is the biggest resistance to this?
Well, probably the battery degradation is probably the biggest resistance, because people don't want to degrade their asset. But that, again, I think that'll change. And I don't know whether it's five, I don't know what the time frame is, whether it's 5 years or what the time frame is, but this is just so logical that we've got these batteries. And so throughout our society, I mean, there's so many cars, right? And so logical that we could now plug them in and have them being part of this utility fabric. And it's really a synergy between a consumer that has their vehicle, they've got their mobility, now they've got some more backup, maybe they can actually get some revenue from their utility when they're out of town or daily if they're cycling their car. It's kind of a whole new world. And one of the coolest projects that's really very early is in Amsterdam, and it's at this Johan Cruyff Stadium Arena. And the football club there, called the Ajax, play at this arena. It's a big stadium. And what they've done, they've got a megawatt of solar, and then they've taken all these old EV batteries and put this huge battery farm in place there. But the coolest thing that they've done is they've set up a number of parking spaces. I think they started with 15, and I'm not sure what they're up to now. But they set up these parking spaces with vehicle-to-grid chargers, right? So bi-directional chargers. And then consenting fans or people that come to the stadium can say, okay, yes, I'll let you have half of the half of the energy in my battery bank or whatever it happens to be, or a third or a quarter. And they make an arrangement and they get compensated for that. So if you start to think about it, we're working for a large stadium in New York, big, big baseball stadium. And we know it peaks out at a little over 8 megawatts. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's 8,000 kilowatts. So if we had 1,000 cars in a parking lot, there were every single one of them plugged in and each delivering 8 kW, which is what my charger actually works out. I can transfer power at a rate of 8 kW.
Wow.
That would power the entire stadium, right? So that's sort of an extreme example, but you start to think about how important this is. What about a factory where they have hundreds of employees that come to work and they just park their cars there? I mean, they could have an arrangement where those cars become, it's almost like the lungs of the electrical system, but they become integrated with the electrical system. So I think we're going to see more and more of that. And this is this whole notion of in the battery world, we always talk about the value stack. And we talk about stacking benefits of batteries because they're in stacking ways of getting revenues from the batteries. But realize this, that the utilities need frequency control on their system 24/7, 365 days a year. So if we have all these batteries and they're carefully controlled, they can provide ancillary services to the grid that handles that frequency, it stabilizes that frequency. They can provide the peak limiting in those events, those hot summer days, or if there's
baseload energy, right?
They could pretty much any configuration, anything that they need can be filled in with these distributed storage systems. Yeah.
It's so exciting and I love the creativity that it requires and invites. I just had a question. I loved your idea of the battery companies or, you know, the manufacturers that are hiring people in these big factories or whatever, actually like taking responsibility for the batteries and swapping them out. So it becomes such an easy and obvious solution
could be handled by the leasing company. A lot of people are leasing vehicles. So the leasing company could have an arrangement that they are the ones that are, they've worked out this deal with the utilities and that they're the ones that are going to be maintaining that state of charge in the batteries and swapping out the batteries if need be. So
the stadium idea is so cool. And clearly there's a lot of potential, the utility policy scale, but what are some more immediate applications or, I guess specifically, what could you recommend to folks interested in getting more involved in this area?
Yeah, I think it's kind of stay tuned. I mean, if you're thinking about buying a new electric vehicle, most of them do not have bidirectional chargers on board. I think the Model 3 will. I think the Nissan Leaf does. But it's something to be aware of when you're purchasing a vehicle that in the coming years, there will be this way for you to tie into the grid and be part of the V2G movement. So you might want to be thinking about getting vehicles that are V2G capable. Same thing with school buses. You know, school districts are buying buses all the time and there's some that are available that are V2G capable and some that aren't. Same thing with chargers. It's time to start thinking about getting bidirectional chargers in our homes. It's time to probably be a little bit active and support this movement. I know that our utility needs we have a municipal utility here in Glendale, needs a little push every now and then to kind of think about sort of some of these new technologies. And when people in the community come forward and say, we want this, we want to be part of this. Our utility here, as I mentioned, we're already developing a virtual power plant of solar and storage systems and thousands of homes, complementing our big storage down at our main power plant. Now we have a big storage going in there, but then this could be the next thing for that utility is to start to think about, okay, there's utility, EV adoption is going like that, right? People, more and more people are buying EVs. So more and more, this is an asset that can be tapped for our communities, but it's early. And there's people that are interested in sort of shaping their careers this is a good one to look at because there's an awful lot of cars out there and there's an awful lot of batteries and there's an awful lot of peak demand. And as you know, as we electrify buildings and as we electrify mobility, you know, there's to be more and more demand on the power system. And therefore, you know, there'll be more and more demand for assets like this to be utilized.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. And this conversation has really illuminated for me that potential in the future. So it sounds like a great next step for anybody who's really passionate about this is to call your utility or even your, you know, elected official to just say, what are you doing about this? And Dad, are there organizations or people who are kind of leading this movement that we should kind of watch?
Well, I think there's, you know, there's a company called Nueve that's making these chargers that's been very involved. There's a company called eMobility. Nissan is out in front. I think Tesla is going to be sliding right in there really soon. So there's a real growing movement. And now with Ford and all the pickup manufacturers are starting to make electric pickups. And so those will be, you know, those are going to be used in all sorts of different ways. From tailgating parties to plugging into the house to being part of the V2G movement. So, yeah, it's just a really exciting space. You know, I did want to mention before we end that there is one thing that kind of makes me think about this and kind of makes me contemplate, you know, what should we be advocating V2G for homeowners, for people that have single family vehicles or single person vehicles, because if you think about it, the fact that we're only using our vehicles 5% of the time is pretty ineffective, right?
Right.
I mean, cars are expensive assets, and then for only to be used 5% of the time is kind of crazy from any, you know, economic, you know, standpoint.
That's why car sharing makes so much sense.
Car sharing makes a lot of sense, and then you know, peer-to-peer car rentals like Turo, things like that. Where these cars, the idea is that you know, if you take off and again you take off at the airport on a flight, maybe you don't leave your car there hooked up in a V2G. Maybe somebody picks up your car and they use it when you're gone, so that your car has a much higher utilization factor. And of course, the higher the utilization factor of the car, the less V2G value there is, right?
So, right.
But all that said. You know, I was looking up, when was the Model T? The Model T was first produced in 1908. So it's had a 113-year run, right? We've had a 113-year run with internal combustion engines and single-person vehicles, so cars. So I think we'll probably have cars for the foreseeable future. But it is interesting to think about that and to think that, you know, ultimately we want to solve all problems in parallel. We don't want to use the inefficiency of our car utilization to help take care of the inefficiency of our grid. We want to take care of both things. Yeah. So, you know, ultimately, we should have a lot more car sharing and a higher utilization of our cars. Ultimately, we would be using a lot more mass transit. There'd be a lot more last mile solutions, again, that would obviate the car. Ultimately, we would change our zoning patterns and our zoning laws to allow for mixed use zoning so that people don't have to commute at all, that they can live and work and play in communities that are really sustainable in the long term. So there is it is important to realize that the inefficiency of car utilization is something that should also be worked on in parallel. But we'll still have V2G, we'll still have school buses, and we'll still have fleets, and we'll still have trucks and all that they can all be part of this utility network and be part of creating energy resilience, which, as we've talked about, is just becoming more and more important.
Right. So perhaps it's a step in the right direction and not the destination necessarily.
I think it is. You know, we've tried for years, we've tried to make more efficient cars, and I'll never forget Ralph Nader saying at a conference that I went to, why are we focusing on making cars more efficient when we should really be getting out of our cars entirely? But that's the long term. There's going to be decades here. And we've got really, really stiff challenges. And we know this from the COP that's just been going on. We've got really, really stiff challenges meeting this climate crisis and addressing this climate crisis. It's all hands on deck. So as power systems become more taxed, and it's more and more difficult to keep the lights on as we electrify buildings and cars, vehicle to grid is a piece of that equation, a very beneficial piece of that equation.
Well, I think that's a really nice place to conclude. Thank you so much, Dad, for enlightening me and those out there in the internet. We'll be back soon in another probably few weeks. Topic to be determined, but stay tuned. Dad, do you have any final closing words before we sign off?
I don't, but just thank you very much. And let's just all carry on. We need to rapidly become a more sustainable society, and that's what all these crash courses are all about. So
yeah, it's go time. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dad. I love you tons. I'll talk to you soon, and have a great day, everybody. Onward.